Just a reminder, you can listen to my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern on Zoomer Radio in Toronto. And we also have about 32, I think we're up to, 32 affiliates throughout the United States and Canada. For a full list of radio stations near you, just go to strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, click on the radio page, and then go to the affiliates page. You can also take the show with you on your mobile device by downloading the Conspiracy Show app. Again, the Conspiracy Show app from Google Play and the Apple Store. Back to your questions and calls for Mitch Batros from The Science of Cycles right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Mitch Batros, The Science of Cycles. Mitch, the Mayans were all about measuring cycles. They had so many different calendars. They had short count calendars that measured gestation periods and crop rotation. And they had, of course, the long count calendar, which was a 5,126-year cycle. They were so in tune with cycles. What did they know? Did they have an idea about cosmic rays, or what were they on about?
Wow, that is another great question, Richard. I think it has to come down to two possibilities. One is some advanced civilization or some entities from another world have came and gave them this knowledge, or that the Mayans are much older than we think. Maybe they're not 5,000 years old. Maybe they've been around for 10,000. Maybe they've been around for 20,000 years. I think it has to be one of the two. It does. It certainly is plausible to collect that type of history and knowledge if it was passed down over centuries or literally thousands of years. Yes, they could do that. So same with the Egyptians. Another idea is that the Mayans, Aztecs, and several others, maybe they did communicate with the Egyptians. Maybe there was interaction between different cultures, and collectively they gathered this. I think that's one certain possibility, and the other one would be certainly harder to explain that it was passed down to them. However, whichever of the two ways that they got it, they did it, and it's damn accurate. And let me tell you, I used to do interviews. When I started with television and then went to radio, and I brought all these scientists from NASA, NOAA, European Space Agency, Naval Observatory, the Royal Observatory, all of them. I brought them all on the show. And I guess, not surprisingly, they wouldn't go public. Although I did ask them, what credence, what gravity did you give to ancient texts with what we know today, they wouldn't, especially those, highly connected with the agencies, would come. But off the record, I can speak a little more freely now, because in the last 5 years, it's like they've been given permission, and they're starting to come out. That many, then, I'm talking 15, 20 years ago, off the record, and you know what that means, they certainly did believe in such things heavily. That much of what they know, well, then, I don't know about today, but much of what they knew 20 years ago did, in fact, come from ancient text.
Well, we just learned recently on this show, Mitch, that Carl Sagan, for years, kept his firm belief in the ancient alien theory under wraps for fear of retribution, because NASA was the only game in town in terms of funding his research, and he thought that if he spoke out about it, he wrote papers about it, or a paper that was quashed, and ever after he was silent on the issue, pretty much.
Yes, that's certainly consistent with my experience. Hopefully things have loosened up, and they're coming forward a little bit more. Just kind of a little aside to that, because I just happened to see the movie last week, or during the holidays. The movie's called Interstellar.
Yes.
I can't remember the actor's name. Hollywood movie called Interstellar. It was fascinating. So, anybody in the audience, if you haven't seen the movie Interstellar, I'd suggest it, because what they talk about it is relativity, if you will. The setting basically is Earth is dying, so they had to send. They had the technology. This is maybe 100 years from now. They had the technology to send astronauts to not just to Saturn, but they went into a wormhole to another galaxy. Anyway, I won't go any further than that. That's a whole other story. But it was very insightful. To me, it was kind of a combination of ancient text and of what we know about that, and the idea that something may have been brought forward to them. And it was mixed with some real hard scientific abilities that we have today.
Right, right. Well, sometimes I think that there's a slow, controlled leak about UFO disclosure coming out of Hollywood. Sometimes, we get it in little dribs and drabs. Let's go west of the Rockies, and I think we found that call from Alaska you were looking for earlier, Mitch. Eric is in Beaver Lakes, Alaska. Eric, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Thank you for hosting, Richard, and my
pleasure.
Mitch. I survived the Great 64 earthquake, which was a 9.3.
That was in Fairbanks, wasn't it?
Well, it was throughout all of Alaska, and bookshelves went over in California, by my understanding. I was a little boy at the time. But anyway, he was talking about Bogoslav.
Yes.
But this is an island that is forming. It's been in the process of forming, and so it spews magma, and it is forming. And also, I wanted to say that he is right, but he may be more right than he realizes about the effects of ash, volcanic ash. It is extremely dirty. It is glass-like and crystalline. It is terrible on the motor on your car or truck.
I'll bet.
It's terrible for a human to breathe in. But I want a comment. I do have a question. I want to get his comment about the effects of volcanic ash on our abundant plant life. And here's what happens. The volcano will go off and spew ash. And we have many. There's Pavlov, there's Veniaminov, there's Bogoslav. They're usually Russian named, and I can't name them all. But it depends on which way the wind is blowing when it goes off. And sometimes it'll go off and then come into Anchorage, which really affects people, and we have to wear masks and stuff like that. But when the ash settles down on our abundant plant life, here's what happens. The moose and the caribou, of course, eat the plants, and this glass crystalline ash, which is on the plants, is just terrible on their teeth. And there have been cases where moose have gone into malnutrition because their teeth are so ground down from the volcanic ash. And I wanted to ask your guest, what does he think about that?
Wow, that's fascinating, Eric. Absolutely fascinating. Mitch, volcanic ash.
Yes, thank you for the information. And I've seen some pictures of the 1964 event. And there's a couple of videos out there. Maybe it's up on YouTube. But the 20 years ago, not many people got to see it. And you can literally see the road is rolling up and down. I'm talking about a road lifting 3 meters. 3 meters. It was like a roller coaster. Unbelievable, the powerful the power of a 9.0 or larger earthquake. Unbelievable. Now, the effects of the ash, not only is it the ash, it's the carbon dioxide. An enormous, I'd say, Richard is pretty much spot on. It's about 2 to 3 years of the pollution that we could produce, the world could produce. Well, at least that's my statistic of about 10 years ago. Maybe it's a little shorter time. But it's an enormous amount of not only the ash, but the carbon dioxide. And you bring up a good point about the effects on animal and plant life. To a smaller degree, certainly not a payoff, not worth the payoff, is some of the ash is actually good for the terrain. But I don't think it probably doesn't balance out with the negative part of it.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for the call from Beaver Lakes, Alaska. Let's go wild card line. Gordon is in Lakeland, Florida. Good morning, Gordon. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you for taking my call, Richard. Mitch, basically, I have a theory that digging into the ground causes pockets and holes, and it has caused earthquakes. And I was wondering, it's basically just three real short but very difficult questions. One, what is the cause of the magnetic field collapse? Number two, what can we do to cure it? Maybe build an electromagnet. Number three, how long will the field be down? In other words, will it be down for a few weeks, and will it be dangerous enough that when the field is down and the cosmic rays come in, could it kill us, or will we survive it? So basically, what's the cause, what's the cure, and then how long will it be down?
Great questions, Gordon, and you also mentioned digging in the ground causing earthquakes, which would lead us, I guess, naturally to a discussion about fracking, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Let me take his last point first. The cause is charged particles, the various charged particles. There's a spectrum. The largest of the charged particles is a solar particle, such as solar flares and so forth. And I'm only talking about size. The smaller cosmic rays is the smallest of the particles, but most deadly, literally. So if I heard the question correctly, I can't tell you what the exact time sequence would be as far as the weakening of the magnetic field. As I understand it, it would drop down to almost 0 point, not quite there. It would have to come close in order for it to make a flip. And that is when the Earth would be most vulnerable to radiation, to various charged particles. But first it's going to bounce around, and we're talking about a few years of bouncing around, including dipping down to the equator. And then in the last stages, which I'm not exactly sure what the timeline would be, it would drop almost 90 degrees and then bounce back. And that would be a rapid bounce, almost like you're bouncing a basketball. So it'd be rapid. And then shortly after that.
Oh, did we lose Mitch? I think we lost Mitch. All right. Well, while we work feverishly to get Mitch back on the line, let me thank, who do we have up near next? Jeff is in Culver City on the wild card line. Jeff in Culver City, welcome to the to Coast to Coast. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Richard. Happy New Year to you and Mr. Beck.
Happy New Year, Jeff.
When he comes back. When I was married to my wife, who was a Guatemalan native, she told me that the history of the Mayans and its descendants were all connected to and inspired by aliens. She called them UFOs, but, you know, we know them as UFOs. And she claimed that the aliens brought the Mayans the knowledge to do whatever it is, you know, they were to do to build their civilization. But my question, was this to Mr. Batchelors, and when he come back, he'll probably ask them, the knowledge and technology that was once given to ancient civilizations like the Egyptians, the Mayans, the Aztecs, and others, seemed to have dissipated over the hundreds and thousands of years. Yet in our own time, for example, just in the last 117 years in America, we went from a papier-mâché aircraft built by the Wright brothers to space shuttles, space stations, and SpaceX rocket launchers. And I'm wondering, do we have this alien technology, and, you know, certain people in our government just keeping it secret, because only in 117 years we went from a paper mache aircraft to space shuttles and rockets being launched by Elon Musk and SpaceX. So, you know, I just want to ask him that.
Right, and look at the leap we went from tubes in radios to solid state. I mean, and that seemed to happen overnight. There was no sort of intermediary stage, or I may be mistaken about that, but I just remember one day it was tubes, we woke up the next and it was solid state. Remember the transistor radio? Where did that come from? All right, we have Mitch back, and I don't know if you were able to hear much of Jeff's question, and even if you did, I'm not sure it's really sort of in your purview, but he was talking about the Mayans and I guess sort of alluding to the ancient alien theory. Wondering if you think that certain technological advances that we're experiencing now, he cited in 117 years, we went from the Wright brothers to putting man on the moon and beyond, the shuttle program and so forth, whether you think this century we've had a technological sort of kick in the pants from aliens.
I don't know the answer to that, Richard. That's another great question. I certainly keep an open mind. One possibility could be a type of synchronicity, a synergy. Think of the age of the computer. That seemed to happen overnight. Bill Gates got the information from IBM, really, and then I forgot his partner's name. I should know these things. He's right here in my backyard. wrote some code for it to initiate, and then I'm mentioning this is to highlight a very rapid swing. We got Jobs who's in the garage doing his Mac. We've got the Gates doing his thing in his garage, and that to me seemed like a kind of an overnight thing as well. Sometimes there's I call it a point of critical mass where we're trudging along at a certain pace, and then something happens, and then there's this leap. But I kind of like your idea better. That if it didn't happen that way, not to be black and white about it, but then yeah, I think we should be open to possibly help from somewhere
else. Alien intervention. Right. Well, when we come back, it begs another question. Speaking of cosmic rays and cycles, and whether or not, certain human behaviors, particularly in the field of economics, some suggest are informed by cycles. Some take advantage of those cycles. Can human behavior be affected by cosmic rays? Back with more of our conversation with Mitch Batros, The Science of Cycles, and your questions and calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Over 75 years ago, a young economist from Harvard, along with some of the world's top scientists, set out to unravel a mystery. The economist was Edward R. Dewey. He was the chief economist for President Herbert Hoover at the beginning of the Great Depression. And Hoover assigned Dewey the task of determining the cause of the Depression. Now, in January of 1941, the Foundation for the Study of Cycles was incorporated in Connecticut, and it was dedicated to discovering the mystery behind cycles. Since then, the Foundation has been working to shed light on this mystery, the Depression, that is, but not the only one. Dewey discovered that it wasn't the first time in the U.S. economy that they suffered a depression. In fact, it had done so with some regularity. So, after seeking out the opinions of economists, he realized the only answer they could give him were conflicting opinions with very little insight. Repeatedly, Dewey was led to the door of cycles. Cycles synchrony. While conducting some research at Stanford Library, Dewey encountered a report on biological cycles. As he read the report, he realized that the cycles biologists had identified in nature were in fact identical in both length and timing to those he had described in business and stocks. the implications of this discovery were to change his life, along with the lives of many others who would follow him. We'll discuss more on the science of cycles with Mitch Batros on the other side. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Mitch, before the break, or during that last floating break, I was mentioning the foundation for the study of cycles started by President Hoover. And this economist, Dewey, realized there was this underlying cycle, these underlying cycles that not only influenced biology, but also human behavior. And I'm wondering, you're studying cycles as they pertain to climate change and earth changes. Is it possible that the cycles that are responsible for all of these things, human behavior and earth changes, and they're all caused by something out there?
Well, I'd go further and say it's a fact. More recently, in the last 15 years, there is a process. It's a modem that is being used pretty significantly. Insurance covers it. That treat anything from depression to schizophrenia or milder variations of mental health issues. And what they use, it's an item called transcranial magnetic stimulation. So they're using magnetic stimulation to affect humans. If that's true, and it is, and it's being used quite often now, because the harshness of electrical shock treatment, of course, would be just horrible, most severe, rarely used now. But all the antidepressants and, you know, any of the medications that are often being used have negative effects of one sort or another. The transcranial magnetic stimulation, known as TMS, does not. It goes directly to the question of, magnetic flux have an influence not only on Earth, but on humans? The answer is absolutely. How far have they gone to signify such a connection? They're tippy-toeing around it. They're not fully... I come from the world where I have to do peer reviews. And for anybody out there who has had to go through a peer review, they just shred you. You better have your facts down and really have the documentation to back it up, because I don't discredit it. It's absolutely necessary. It's a filtering process to kind of, you know, toss away the not so significant stuff with really tangible, important things.
Agreed. But unfortunately, like everything else, that whole process, the peer review process, in many cases, has become politicized.
You know, that is true. That's a very good point, Richard. I'm going back a few years before it took hold, and it hadn't even 15 years ago, it really hadn't filtered into other areas, not that I was aware of anyway, other than what I noticed most in climate. However, your point is well taken. Certainly that could be an aspect. But anyway, I just said that to let people understand that it just takes time. I think I as a journalist, I can come forward and put both feet in it and say there is a definite causal effect. But when I try to get some of the main scientists that come from the most known agencies, it's hard to get them to confirm. But the studies, just the one that you mentioned, are incredibly significant. If you know anything about acupuncture, what an acupuncturist works with is energy, is magnetics in part. We are energy, and we have these what we call meridians. What's a meridian? I'd say it's a magnetic flux, a place of balancing energy. Chi, Qi, Kai, Prana, Gaia, the force, whatever you want to call it. This has been known for thousands of years. We're just kind of putting a modern terminology to it. I think it's always been there, and it you know, is it good or bad? That's a good. I wrote articles about that 7 years back, and then I said that as the magnetic field weakens, and this was happened to be a period of during the early 2000s, we were in a solar maximum, and people were wondering, well, you know, how's it it has effect on us as humans. And I said, look, for some people, it's going to be a positive effect, that they get energy and clarity out of it, that somehow harmony comes. Others, it's just the opposite, that they experience more depression and so forth. And I mentioned that to encompass this idea of balance, where each person is individually. I don't know how it's going to affect them, but I will say it will affect them.
Well, if human behavior is affected by these cycles, by cosmic rays, if, for example, we have predictable cycles for those in the know, wink, wink, about the economy, and I'm guessing that there are you know, groups of people that have made untold riches because they understand these cycles. But does this not lend some credence to the idea of astrology?
I don't know about astrology, maybe astronomy.
Well, the early mathematicians, people like Pythagoras, they were astrologers too. They studied the radionics of spheres. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with cosmic rays, but when you have, you know, these planetary, these heavenly bodies sort of interacting with each other, there must be some electromagnetic effect. And I'm wondering if that could also explain cycles in things like human behavior, and then that does point back to astrology. Now, mind you, it's not very precise. Much of that knowledge has probably been lost to by modern astrologists. But I don't know. To me, I think there might be a connection.
I would say here's our common ground: is that we don't know which effect it's going to have an effect on the person. Sure, I've been to astrologist, but it's pretty cool. But, you know, every astrologist that I spoke to, it was always a yin and yang. It could go this way or it could go that way. It's hard. How do you know if, you know, these certain events, from an astronomer point of view, when there's alignments or these events that I speak of related to charged particles, is it going to have a positive effect or a negative effect on a person? I don't know if we really know that. I think it could be either or. Now, to your question about economists, there's no whispering about it. I've been approached. They're dead serious about it. They are knowing of these events. Now they look at it from both points of view. The ones that approached me were more interested in the weather, but we're talking about people who wanted to know about the solar cycles and, you know, where are we and what's expected and would the crops grow this way or that way. But then there were others who were in commodities, in precious metals in particular. Do you think the energy, the people are going to want to buy more, or will we have some kind of downfall? I don't have the answer to it, and I told them that. I had more answers for weather. You know, I could tell them about patterns of what might be expected. But when it got to commodities, you know, I'm going to pass that to you.
Well, I think these are the modern-day alchemists. I think these are the people. I don't think there are a lot of them, But these are the very rich and the very powerful, and I think they know how these cycles work,
mm-hmm.
as it pertains to certain human activities.
I think you're onto something.
Wildcard line, Dan is in Northern California. Dan, welcome to Coast.
Hi there. Question for Mitch.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Mitch, I love your topic because I love the idea of cycles within our solar system. But the one specific question I had was regarding earthquakes and the appearance of lightning at earthquakes. And I think I have an explanation for that.
All right, Dan, let's hear it.
Okay, let's look at the New Zealand earthquake in November. You imagine you're sitting on the coast of New Zealand, the western coast of the Southern Island, looking eastward, and the earthquake hits. Within less than 1 second, at the speed of sound, two plates off the coast of that beach move 30 feet at the speed of sound at the depth of 9 miles. The energy released when that happens, affects the atmosphere over the Earth, and you get a plasma effect, a flash that occurs. This was recorded at the New Zealand earthquake, and I'm sure as a year or two passed by, I'll have a lot more documentation.
All right, Dan, thank you for that. Well, I think you were sort of alluding to that earlier, Mitch. You were sort of explaining...
No, he's speaking of something else, and he's right on. There's no wishy-washy about this. This is part of science. It has a name. They're called sprites. That's the name for it. It's called a sprite, just S-P-R-I-T. And this is a phenomena that they're getting more familiar with and learning, and it's directly related to charged particles and related to earthquake events and so forth. It goes up into the atmosphere. And it basically has the form of a lightning storm. There's not a lot of information about it. The information I'm gathering is coming from the Goddard Space Weather Center. They're familiar with it, and they're realizing that, again, that connection between the sun and beyond, that these charges, if you will, have an interaction between the ionosphere, the atmosphere, and even beyond up into the thermosphere.
Is it similar to Aurora Borealis?
It might. No. No.
Right.
No.
You were almost on board, and then no. Okay. Eddie.
I'm looking at, visually, it would look more like a lightning storm.
Okay. All right, let's go to the wild card line again. Eddie's in El Paso, Texas. Eddie, good morning.
Hello, Richard.
Hi there.
Hi, sir. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a very interesting topic. Mitch, I want to thank you for your research, and God bless you, sir, because this is very interesting. I just have one question. In regards to your previous discussion of regarding earthquakes, pole shift, and the climate change, and mainly regarding the tectonic plate shifts, you mentioned, Mitch, that you didn't see anything that would be like really disastrous as far as that area. My question is, in your opinion, what do you think if something like that was to happen, would that affect our Yellowstone caldera? I'll take my answer off the air.
Eddie, thank you for that. Good question. All right. So a magnetic or a pole shift, could that set off the Yellowstone caldera? We got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes here.
The short answer is yes. Let me clarify. What I was talking about was a huge momentous, where there's actual crustal. What I mean by crustal displacement is that the world turns literally. It rotates. No, that's a no. Will there be significant events occurring as this process goes along? Absolutely. We will see an increase in all the phenomena, all the way from extreme weather events such as straight line winds and the microburst and so forth, as well as earthquake and volcano activity. This is the Earth finding its balance. It's always done it. It gets out of balance, and there's bulges are created, or there's literal bulges occur in the Earth, which has a direct causal effect with the magnetics, and it sometimes it overheats, and sometimes it gets too cold, and it goes back to trying to find its ambient temperature, and as a consequence of those events, we have all this phenomena. It's just that there's a lot of people on the Earth right now that are watching it, and we can all report about it with our phones.
Mitch, leave us with the website, and also is there a newsletter, or how do you communicate with people?
Well, first of all, Rich, I want to say this was a lot of fun. You're a great host. This was great. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. Likewise.
You bet. The website is scienceofcycles.com. I've had other companies. I had Earth Changers Media for many, many years. And now I've switched into, as we've discussed throughout the night, focusing on the cycles that take us to our galaxy and beyond. And yes, I do have a newsletter. The newsletter's free. And until January 15th, you can go to the website free. We're not going to go, we have to switch over on January 15th to a small fee for members that can have access to my research.
All right, scienceofcycles.com. Mitch, I gotta say goodbye, but thank you. I've enjoyed this conversation immensely. Thank you for hanging out.
You're welcome.
Mitch Batrow, scienceofcycles.com. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galati, Chris Burrows, Lex Lonehood, Juan Velasquez, Donna Walker, and here in Toronto, Scott Guest, Tom Schenk, and Nathan Smith, I'm Richard Serrett. Thanks for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. So long for now.